Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to be back with you all this July for another episode of Psychiatric Times Psyched Perspectives. My name is Dr. Frank Clark, and again, I'm a board certified psychiatrist with Prisma Health in Greer, South Carolina. I am psyched to have one of my mentees, a colleague, and a friend, Dr. Emily Lafferman, as my guest for today. Dr. Lafferman is a lover of nature. She is beloved by her family. She is a devoted wife, mother, friend, sibling, and she is an advocate for her patients and for her garden. She loves nature. She is a graduate from Emory University, where she received her BA in psychology. She then went on to do her medical school training at Ross University. And we are very grateful that she chose our residency program in Greer, South Carolina, where she has flourished for the last several years. She is a current PGY3, and we are looking forward to having a wonderful discussion on the themes of trauma, transformation, and truth. So without further ado, welcome Dr. Lafferman.
Thank you so much, Dr. Clark. I couldn't ask for a better introduction. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here and really looking forward to this topic today.
Well, so am I. And thank you for what you have done and continue to do in your community and for our residency as it relates to being one of our co-facilitators for our reflections and expressions. And with that, I think that's a perfect segue. I know that you wanted to start off with some poetry.
I would love to start off with some poetry. And as you mentioned, our reflections and expressions is one of the quality improvement projects I've taken on, and it gives us a chance to talk about a lot of the themes that come up in our work as psychiatrists and therapists that we don't always get to really talk about just in between patients or seeing each other in the break room. But it gives us a lot of time for reflection, and especially about these themes that are so near and dear to our hearts. And so, this poem that I'm reading today, I wrote recently going into my third year and looking forward to just the changes in patient care going from mostly outpatient to inpatient and how that might help transform myself and how I care for patients. So, I've named it Regalis Becoming. Here I enter the nocturne halls where grief coils quiet in the vents. Where minds unravel, all confess, and silence is what healing invents. I listen not just with ears, but with ache behind my eyes, with wings still damp from past cocoons, and all the selves I've left behind. I hold their rage like river stones, their silence a sacred rite. I meet their terror in the room, drawn like moth toward hidden light. What strange alchemy it is to cradle madness with my care, to trace the tremble in their wings and find my own reflection there. In their unraveling, I meet myself, the neophyte I learned to hush, the longing cloaked in patterned grief, the stillness pulsing under rush. I do not cure, but I companion through transferences thick with flame. And in their flicker, I grow whole, unnamed, unmasked, yet still the same. So let the nights stretch long and raw, and let weekends be a storm. I will move through each shadowed hall, soft winged, flame drawn, and transformed.
I wanted to give a an intentional pause there. That was transformative. That was palpable. And I appreciate you sharing this with our audience and with me. I remember actually the first time you sent me that poem after being visited by the Regalis moth. And as a fellow poet, I decided to write something in response to your poem, which I will read. A genial gift. Transformed by your attraction to the light of purpose, I too seek resurrection from the shadows of my trauma that once darkened the hickory leaves of my life tree that were stunted by a weathering and withering root system saturated in the soil of exile, craving for companionship. Your arrival, impeccable and impactful, spreading your wings of regal enlightenment on the shoulders of my being, yearning to shrug off the horns of my immaturity and insecurity. Gratitude for your stately presence in my heart that marvels and flutters at your audacious adaptability to renew, to reflect, and revive self through creative and compassionate expression. Transformed by your attraction to the light of loving, I am flourishing. So I think if I remember correctly, Dr. Lafferman, this is the first time we've shared those poems
Yeah.
in a public, in a virtual setting. But I'm curious, as we talk about these themes of trauma, transformation, and truth, how was that for you, this reading that out loud?
It's very releasing because I think that, especially knowing that the potential of my poem and my words to fall on seasoned ears is a feeling, a preemptive feeling, maybe from hope that it'll resonate for others, especially those that have faced a lot of trauma themselves or worked with patients with trauma, and most importantly, seen and recognized trauma of their own in their patients. How about you? How'd you feel?
It was very therapeutic, as you know, as a fellow poet. Our writings say a lot about us and who we are, but also what we want to give to others. And we hope and pray that our words will resonate with the collective.
Absolutely.
So I thought it was very transformative, and to hear your words, and it felt good to respond. And I thank you for the gift of the moth that you shared with me, and I really appreciated the imagery in your poem. So it leads me to, want to dive in here as we continue this conversation. Why are you so interested in this topic of trauma and transformation and truth? How does one have an affinity for this, and why is it important to you?
Yeah, this is actually something that I found myself reflecting on over the past few years throughout residency. I think going into residency, knowing that psychiatry will be facing trauma quite a lot. There's anxiety, there's depression, and all of the kind of run-of-the-mill things that we run into. But trauma always, in my mind, it was quite intimidating. And I didn't have the insight, I think, as it maybe a new intern, as to why it was so intimidating. Then when I started therapy and working with patients, I started recognizing, oh, there's it's in me, it's a me thing, that when this person starts to really open up about their traumatic experiences and whatever it is and how it manifests now in their lives, there was a discomfort in myself. And even though it wasn't being externalized or recognized by the patient, I realized that's actually a clinical tool for me. That's actually something that dissonance in myself, that's a common thread between me and my patients and my colleagues and all of us as humans. And when I shifted into that perspective and realized how trauma is truly, it creates a paradox, doesn't it? And you captured it perfectly in your poem. You know, you had that soil of exile, right? And that desire for belonging. And yet here we are feeling so separate from one another and so isolated. But at the end of the day, no matter what flavor or chronicity our trauma might have been, right? It's still the common thread. You know, it's that mycelial network that connects us all beneath the soil. And as time's gone on in residency, I've really come to appreciate that.
Your remarks resonate with me in many ways. One of the things that I kept hearing was this theme of psychological survival. And for a lot of us, I think we see this when we are in that space, that sacred space, that safe space with our patients who are sitting across from us. But I know you and I, from a self-disclosure standpoint, do our own therapy. And so I think we could also understand, so to speak, what it feels like to sit in the other chair and for us to experience that psychological survival and not feel like we are in exile. Which brings me to another thought of we talk about how this can apply, how we see transformation and trauma and truth in our clinical environments, but I can't help but think that this is happening in our society on a daily basis, this collective sense of trauma. And I wondered if you could speak more about, even from a psychodynamic standpoint, of, when we think about othering and these core beliefs, these cognitive lenses that we wear, how do you see that going? And how do you see that? Is there some intersectionality there with how we define trauma and how we define this survival to just be.
I love this. I love this because there's the individual level and having a fuller context. There's individual traumas we can experience and appreciate in our patients. When we look at, you know, the state of our country and our political affairs now, it's we do see this significant polarization, don't we, in that othering and the experiences and that sense of isolation that they're so different than me. They're so different than this. That don't, how could they think that? How could they believe that? And, you know, we're all looking at the same thing from different angles, right? So there is, I feel there's so many reasons for this, right? Whether it's media constantly focusing on the negative, giving us this as a collective, a sense that the world is not a safe place. And getting that on a constant basis and that constant exposure, then how does that result, right? That results in parents never feeling comfortable letting their children out to play or running around the neighborhood. And then you're in this constant state of anxiety when your child's not in your view or they're out with their friends. Oh, got to turn on their location. We didn't do that back in the day, you know? But it's this sense that everyone carries now. So how do we face that, right? How can we shift?
Well, and you bring up a great point. It reminds me, your remarks remind me of, I'm blanking on his name, Dr. Jonathan Haidt, I believe, who wrote the book, An Anxious Generation. And he talks about that in a lot of ways of how we are now in this collective of safetyism.
Yes.
And so, not that there's, we don't necessarily want to get into all or none thinking. There's some gray area, but he would postulate that maybe we want to protect our children, but at what cost? And going back to that collective trauma, we have these core beliefs that have shifted. The narrative has shifted, and I would agree with you that media or this constant news cycle, whether it be social media or the media that you and I grew up with turning on the TV or even the radio. At times, we've been inundated with that. And so it almost sounds like what I'm hearing you say is that our limbic system, our amygdalas are just heightened.
Oh yeah. So and that's a good point. There's this whole area of the brain that we don't have conscious control over, right? And what are these emotions that we feel attached to traumas, right? Typically they're negative, right? And it's because of that involvement of that part of the brain we can't necessarily access. And so it's this energy in our bodies, and then it has to flow, kind of flow through these belief systems, and then that manifests an emotion for us, an experience, and how we experience the world, and how we relate to the world, more importantly. And you and I have talked about Doris Brothers' work and how she talks about our experiences throughout life create this sort of systemically, what are the SECs?
Systemically emergent certainties.
Systems, yes. And so, I think that when we are able to look at the belief systems, right, then if we are able to recognize them and really understand them, if when we get that anxiety, when we get that fear, that constant hypervigilance, then maybe those belief systems are actually quite out of alignment with our personal values or the values of our community. And that's why it manifests in these really negatively emotional experiences that we are treating, right? I mean, in a problem-focused psychiatric practice or therapy, we're trying to help people with that. So how do we get to the belief system? How do we shift that?
Well, I would be curious to hear your strategies for how do we go from trauma to transformation and truth? How do we, not just for our patients, but for ourselves as we think about the collective and we think about shared humanity and we think about self-compassion, because a lot of our patients that we provide care for, and we're all patients. We have difficulty with self-compassion, right? There's survivor's guilt, right? There's psychological survival. We are trying not to exist in exile. I almost kind of think about it as the stories of lepers back in the day, where right they were exiled, they were isolated, they were ostracized, and I think most people who have experienced trauma, it may not reach the threshold of post-traumatic stress disorder. However, we all have our traumas, whether they be micro traumas or macro traumas, they exist. So, what are your suggestions, Dr. Lafferman, of how can we heal as not only the individual, but also the collective?
Well, from both, like you said, both as a provider and as and for the patient, there's it all starts in the room, right? It all starts with creating that safe environment and ultimately just being human. And I think we've talked about this before, right? Is that some people who are heavily traumatized, their belief system may tell them that other humans are not reliable, they cannot be trusted, and most likely they're going to hurt me. So how do you rate that, right? And without forcing sort of a reliving of their trauma either, right? So how do you meet that? How do you hold space non-judgmentally? And I think that that's it's it is. Very an individual thing. Sometimes it's a compatibility thing, being with the right provider and having, like a good match there, right? But how can you create that openness, right? And a lot of times it just starts with holding space,
I
right?
receive that. I receive that holding space. I receive what I'm hearing you. You're pretty much describing the therapeutic alliance. It all starts with building trust. And many of our patients come in with, when we think about Erikson's stages of development, many of them have mistrust, because of adverse childhood experiences and again, shaping their core beliefs. So holding space, I believe, is important. Being a good listener is important. I've been listening to a book by Jordan Peterson called The 12 Rules of Life. And one of the rules he talks about is that about being an effective listener and making the assumption that the person that that you're listening to knows something that you don't. And I think that there's a lot of value in that, right? Our patients teach us something every day, right? We can have all the medical knowledge and understand the pharmacodynamics and pharmacokinetics and the psychodynamics of psychiatry and pathology and treatment, but our patients, we have to assume that they know something that we don't. And that is a nugget of wisdom that I think they offer us each and every day. We have not been in their shoes, but I think we can embody Dr. Rogers, Carl Rogers, from a humanistic psychotherapy standpoint. There's so many things that we can embody, but I think that will allow us to speak our truths, but and our patients to eventually speak their truth in a garden that has not been able to grow as much because of the mistrust. But all it takes is planting one seed of hope and one seed of validation that can transform the garden, as you know.
Absolutely. And I love the bi-directional, theme there, right? Is that if we sit there openly and see them eye to eye with warmth, right? And it doesn't have to be familiarity, but warmth, we can then develop that trust and maybe help them move through some of those developmental stages that became very stuck, right? And might we then become, right, that question we try to ask ourselves, like, who am I to this person? Not like that, not really like the therapist, not their psychiatrist, but like they, right? Maybe there's an aspect of, oh, I'm the first female in this, 20-something year old guy's life who's been stable and caring or present. Who knows, right? And might I be rebuilding what he needed as a child, right? And that's definitely, and what's fueling that, right? What's fueling my ability to sit here and connect with this person? Is it my own desire to heal? That's been postulated, right? By a lot of theorists in this field, that we sit here and when we finally get to that point and like that seed that you planted, it starts to take to the light, right? I mean, it really, you feel it. You really do. And it is healing. I won't deny that. It has been for me. When you really feel like I've earned that trust. I don't mess
No,
it up,
I wholeheartedly agree with you. Through my own therapy over the last decade, I have learned more about myself, and learning more about myself has allowed me, in my opinion, to provide better care to my patients.
right? Mm-hmm.
So, when you know more, you can do more.
Yeah.
So, well, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to.
Just an agreement.
So as we close, are there any final thoughts that you would like to leave our viewers today? This has been a very engaging conversation.
I think the one thing that I would love for everyone to keep in mind in working with trauma, or really anybody who comes in seeking help, is that we will be there. We can hold space. We can validate, but we meet resistance. And there's a reason for that. And to always set our own frustrations aside and kind of look past it. And that the resistance may very well be coming from a place that is, if there's hope here, hope is uncertainty. And I can't trust uncertainty. Right. And so, not to be discouraged, but there's always a reason behind it. And when we stick to our truths, And we recognize there maybe there is something to be learned from this patient, like you said. Maybe that's what's going to fuel the therapeutic relationship.
What I'm hearing is that going back to that theme of shared humanity, we can be a blessing to our, we can be a blessing to our patients, but in return, our patients are a blessing to us. Well, Dr. Lafferman, thank you for your remarks. Thank you for your wisdom, and thank you for your continued invaluable contributions to your community, to your fellow peers, to your faculty, and to me. I know that I'm the wisdom that you have imparted in my life. And I'm thankful for you. And I'm thankful for our mentor-mentee relationship, which is reciprocal. And so, again, thank you for being you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Clark, for your mentorship and all the processing and guidance through these years. And thank you so much for allowing me to join in today. This was really fun.
Likewise. So, until next time, for this is our episode of Psyched Perspectives. I'm Dr. Frank Clark. Peace and blessings to you.
This podcast is presented by Psychiatric Times, the number one psychiatric publication in the U.S. Visit us at psychiatrictimes.com for the latest clinical news, expert perspectives, and CME opportunities. Thank you for listening.